Mr. Knepper, good morning to you.
Good morning, Chief Justice, members of the board, counsel. I'm Love County Deputy Public Defender, and I'm representing Tyler Lins. I'd ask for a few minutes for a rebuttal. The important facts of this case are basically in history and court, and they're fairly brief, so if you don't mind, I'll set them. Tyler Lins was arrested by February 2006 on a assault which had been committed on that date. The complaint was filed on 8 February 2016 for domestic assault with an alleged offense date of 5 February 2016. On 21 July 2016, the County Court of Buffalo County set a trial date at the state's request, 9 August 2016. Mr. Lins had no excludable time from his speedy trial calculation of 26 by 2016. On 26 July 2016, Mr. Lins entered here for the election hearing. Mr. Lins turned himself in the following day on 27 July 2016. Then on the next day, 28 July 2016, Mr. Lins filed his motion for a bench trial and jury trial. On 5 August 2016, the County Court set the case for the bench trial. 22 September 2016. 11 August 2016, Mr. Lins filed his motion for absolute. Then on 19 August 2016, a hearing is held on his motion for absolute. County Court ultimately overruled the motion on 20 September 2016. Mr. Lins appealed.
This counsel, when did your client county court accept your client's waiver of jury trial?
It was filed before the court on 28 July 2016. Beyond that, I can't tell you. On that very same day, we had it certified the delivery of that.
Well, at some point, did the trial judge in county court examine the defendant as to the voluntariness of his waiver?
I believe it would have had to have been by law. The district court overruled his appeal as well. We're asking to find through a formal review that the state failed to bring this trial within the statutorily required 6 months that this motion for absolute discharge should have been sustained.
Counsel, a denial of a motion for discharge can constitute a final order. But in 2009, in State v. Williams, this court mandated that the trial judge, in his order, set forth the excludable days and the number of days remaining for the defendant to be brought to trial. The order here did not comply with the mandate in State v. Williams. So do we have a complete final order even to review here at this level?
I'll submit that question to the court. Nebraska Revised Statute 29, Section 29, follows that. States that one of the excludable time periods for the six months of speedy trial calculation is a period of delay resulting from the defendant. But State v. Petty, 2005 case, qualifies that excludable period by stating that the statute is consistent by resulting to a timely scheduled trial. Mr. Lindsay's it was a timely scheduled trial. The state made that scheduling decision to try Mr. Lins outside the six-month period of 21 July, which was hasn't done anything, caused any kind of delay, not caused any. So under the Petty case, there was a new rule introduced, a presumption that the next day is going to be available at the trial date, as long as it's within the next 6 months, was good enough, was soon enough. So there was a new presumption. It had overruled Rhodes and Kriegler. That old rule, I believe that's where we are. We're under the old rule because Petty does not apply to an untimely schedule. said that the state had a burden to prove good cause to exclude any time after the appearance of the defendant to the time of the trial. And the state did not do that in this case. So even the one, well, so there was one day delay. Conceivably, by one interpretation of the statute, which starts the clock on the offenses, which so under one interpretation, August 9 would now, because of the delay, August 9 would now be on time. Conceivably, the bench trial could have been had, but it would have still been time limit. The state didn't do that either. Instead, the county court and the state scheduled a trial. There are some other points. There is a question of which date do we use as the final date that the state could have brought Mr. Lynn's trial. And there are two possibilities, August 5 before the delay that Mr. Lynn has experienced, August 5 or August 8, depending on how one has the statute. Language in the statute in the state's brief, which I read, I think they make a point that language suggests that there has to be a complaint in the defense in conjunction with the arrest warrant. So possibly the 8th is.
Counsel, I think one of your arguments is that the trial did not really start when the jury selection commenced. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Now, counsel, does it really matter? Isn't the point that when a court orders a defendant to appear for any hearing, whether it be an arraignment, a motion to suppress, jury selection, trial, wouldn't the defendant have an obligation to appear? And if he does not, then a warrant will be issued. Wouldn't that be a fair statement?
He has an obligation to appear. He caused the delay, Your Honor. I agree.
Because what?
Positive. But I wouldn't go any further than that. I would say that the court's ruling, which was based exclusively on this argument, that the jury trial and jury selection are the same thing. Decided outside jurisdictions for the court. No aid, sir.
But if you don't show up, whether it doesn't matter what the hearing is for, let's say it was a motion to suppress he failed to show up for, the court would then have rescheduled that, and that may bump the jury trial down the road. Now, wouldn't that be caused by the defendant?
Correct, but I believe we're under the old rule without the presumption that any introduced votes in the prisoner, they would also have to show what. See, I'm out of time.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Mr. Meyer, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. Good morning, Justice Supreme Court. May it please the Court, my name is Joe Meyer. I'm Assistant Attorney General here on behalf of the appellee of the State of Nebraska. The state submits that the District Court did not err in affirming the County Court's denial of the motion for absolute discharge. As I laid out in my brief, there are, I think, three different ways this court can decide. The easiest and I think the most straightforward way would be a clarification of the Petty case, that the timeliness of a scheduled trial is irrelevant when a defendant causes this delay within the state's 6-month timeline.
Counsel, I'm going to ask you the same question I asked opposing counsel. A motion for discharge can be a final order, but in 2009, this court mandated in State v. Williams that the trial judge set forth the actual calculation of excludable days and the days remaining to be brought to trial. That was not done here. So do we have a complete final order to even review?
I have to give you the same answer. I did not catch that potential problem. Fair board. Defer to the court on that.
Okay.
Well, the county court overruled the motion.
Right.
It just didn't include its reasoning in there.
It seems
so it fully disposed of the motion, didn't it?
Absolutely.
And if they hadn't filed a timely appeal within 30 days, the state would be arguing that they failed to appeal timely, wouldn't it?
Correct. Yeah. The county court's order seemed to be an application of Petty. It doesn't, I don't think, I just re-looked at it this morning. It doesn't cite the Petty, but the county court's reasoning was that jury selection is a condition precedent to jury trial. Mr. Litz failed to appear for jury selection, making a jury trial on that date impossible. And then the county court said it would be speculative to try to determine what would happen in between those days, the day of jury selection and the day of the scheduled trial on August 11th.
Your opponent relies upon the filing of the written waiver of jury. What's the state's view about when such a waiver becomes effective? Is it immediately, is it irrevocable and effective immediately upon filing, or is that something a defendant could change his or her mind about and withdraw before the court acts on it?
I thought of that a little bit. I wasn't able to find any case law. I mean, it seems to me off the top of my head, if the court is preparing for a jury trial, the court has been under the assumption here for 5 months that a jury trial will occur, the defendant comes in almost on the 11th hour, waives his right to a jury trial, that, I don't know under the statute, under 20 or under 1207, whether that would be a delay, but, in the court's previous case law, it says that a defendant that reappears is not necessarily entitled to a trial immediately upon reappearance.
Let's assume that, for purposes of argument, that the filing of the waiver is not effective until the trial court accepts it. On this record, when would such an acceptance have occurred?
I didn't examine the record terribly close. I would think July 28th. I believe that there was a hearing where Mr. Lynch made that waiver and the court accepted it. I think a lot of times practice is for judges to inquire a little further on whether they're actually waiving the right to specify the trial.
Your opponent said, if I heard him correctly, August 5th, and I don't know that I understood the rationale for that, and I think he has some time left, so perhaps he'll enlarge on it. Do you see a rationale for August 5th?
That would have been...
That's the date of the arrest.
Yeah, that was
6 months from the date of the arrest.
6 months from the date of arrest. No, I don't.
All right, thank you.
And so... Petty does include the word timely in its opinion. The state would submit that timeliness of the trial is not affected. The Petty Court didn't do any analysis to determine whether the trial setting was timely or not. The cases before Petty, particularly Letchler, do not talk about the timeliness of the trial. I think it's more straightforward to look at it as, did the defendant cause a delay before the state's six-month trial deadline expired, and here he certainly did, and so that tolls the clock, pauses the clock, or stops it, whichever wording you want to use, and then under 1207, the court has to determine how much time is excluded, and the case law is clear that it's not a one-day delay, as Mr. Lynch would like for you to understand. It's the time from his failure to appear until the next reasonably available trial setting, and we submit that the September 22nd trial setting was reasonable under the Petty Doctrine. And
well, if the trial court had space for a jury trial on August 9th for X number of days, why didn't it have time for a bench trial on the same day?
I can't really speak to that, Your Honor.
There's only 1 day delay here.
Yeah.
Are you saying that that the speedy trial clock starts over when the defendant fails to appear on a particular date?
It doesn't start over entirely, but in my brief I set out that I think 58 days are excludable, the time from July 26th when he did not appear until September 22nd, 58 days is excludable. He filed his motion for discharge during that time. So,
he moved for discharge on August 11th because he assumed that after the 9th of August that the time had run.
Right.
Why didn't it run?
Because he failed to appear on...
For one day, and that changes the whole speedy trial clock?
Yeah, under the Petty and Leshner and that litany of cases, we don't just look at the time he was away from court. We look at the time from his failure to appear until the next reasonably available.
You're saying that in one day the trial judge filled up all the time it had set aside for the August 9th jury trial?
I can't speak to that.
Do you know how many other jury cases the judge had on his docket?
I wasn't able to see that. I mean, the...
You don't have any reason to believe this was the only one?
No, and jury selection was scheduled either 2 weeks or 10 days before trial. The statute allows for that. 2004 allows for that, and I think that's, just speaking speculatively, I think that's a... You know, they probably picked juries for more than one case. So there were other cases behind Mr.
What's the custom in that court?
I don't know.
Does it a jury session?
I think so. And so then I think I've pretty well explained our argument under Petty. This the second, and what the district court did in this case would be we asked the court to, if needed, find that jury selection starts trial in regard to a defendant's right to a speedy trial. There's been cases outside of jurisdictions that I cite to and that the district court cited to. I believe that argument's pretty straightforward. I'm not sure if this court will or needs to decide what date the clock ran here, but as I say in my brief, the state submits that it started on the information date of February 8th, 2016. I think just a fairly straightforward reading of the statute is that for a domestic assault charge, the six-month period commences on the date the defendant is arrested on a complaint filed as part of the warrant for arrest. So he, of course, was arrested 3 days before the information, but he wasn't arrested on a complaint filed as part of the warrant for arrest until February 8th. And if needed, you could go into the history of the statute. And I mean, if this were not a domestic assault charge, the clock would start on the date of the filing of the complaint. And for him to be able to benefit in some way would be an unintended windfall for him. And then lastly, if needed, if this court were to say that he only caused a one-day delay, then that would push, I believe, the date to August 9th, which just so happens to make his alleged untimely trial has now become timely by his failure to appear. And then you could kind of get into the analysis of jury trial is not available unless jury selection. I know that's a lot to digest, but if there's any other questions from the court? Seeing no questions, we ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
Yes, 1 minute 46.
1 minute and 46 seconds, Mr. Knepper.
Thank you. I think that the main difference that we have talked about here that we are assuming that the presumption that Petty created does not apply, which leaves us with the old rule about the presumption, old rule on the Rosen Hoover, that after the reappearance of a defendant who has responded, the state must prove good cause to exclude any time from his trial. And I think that's the rule that we're operating with.
So you would say that the state had to prove that this one-day failure to appear caused a bump from his August 9th jury trial because some other jury trial was in place at that date, and therefore the earliest date that the trial could begin would have been September 22nd.
Thank you very much. Our next case of the day.